I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and former host here at PW Torch Livecast. If you're looking for my shows, they have moved as of July 2017. They're now called the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available through Podcast One. Enter Wade Keller on your podcast app or iTunes and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where I cover Raw and my first show of the week, SmackDown with my second show of the week, and then the Flagship Edition with a co-host, and we cover a broad array of pro wrestling current events, and then I end the week with a weekly interview. That's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, now at Podcast One. Subscribe today. Just search Wade Keller.
Blog Talk Radio.
It is Thursday, October 26th, 2017. This is the PW Torch Livecast Post-Impact Edition. Mike McMahon and Andrew Socek with you, breaking down what was an interesting episode, to say the least, of Impact Wrestling. We'll also talk, of course, the news this week that Jeff Jarrett was officially terminated by the company. But Andrew Socek, how are you this fine Thursday evening?
I'm feeling kind of defeated this Thursday evening. Is this a new normal where just random stuff happens for an hour and a half every night and then some stuff makes sense but 90% of it doesn't? I don't know. I'm okay, thank you.
It does feel that way. I'm sure we'll get to breaking down the actual happenings on this show. A lot of it didn't air from the Impact Zone. About probably 70% of it was from their sister promotions or partner promotions, whatever we want to call them. One of the matches made sense from a build standpoint towards Bound for Glory, but most of them were just random matches, like you said. But before we get to that, and we'll get to your calls, of course, as well, at 515-605-9345, let's start the show talking about the news this week that Jeff Jarrett is or has been terminated. They've terminated their agreement with Jeff Jarrett. They've terminated their agreement with Global Force Wrestling. I guess first things first, I mean, did you sort of feel that this was ultimately inevitable? I mean, I know some people felt like that they were going to bring him back to the company at some point. He had been on an indefinite leave of absence, but I always sort of felt like it was just a matter of time. You don't put someone like that on an indefinite leave of absence. There's just usually no coming back from that. So did you think that they would find a way to bring him back, or were you surprised at the news this week that he was apparently gone for good?
I was actually a little surprised, mainly just because Ed Nordholm, maybe a month ago, maybe it was more like 2 months ago, but he was saying how he wanted Jeff Jarrett to come back. And in the meantime, you know, he still had his lieutenants like Dutch Mantel and Sanjay Dutt and Scott D'Amore. So I always did kind of think that was the plan, to bring him back into the fold, just because I can't even imagine, you know, Ed Nordholm doesn't seem to, I mean, he's open about it that he doesn't know a lot about the professional wrestling business. So I don't even know who he would really go to next to take Jarrett's place. And I'm sure Jarrett had a big part, you know, it was a huge part, I guess, in bringing Anthem buying that company. So I figured eventually he would come back, but I guess after what happened, which we'll probably go into in that video, I guess they were really left with no other choice at this point.
Yeah, that's what I think it was. It came down to, is like you said, they really weren't left with much of a choice. If you don't know the story, he was up in, I believe, Edmonton on Friday night. According to the promoter up there, he was drinking in the locker room, had passed out in the locker room, was in no condition to wrestle, but did go out and wrestle a match. And then no-showed a show on Saturday night. I guess from what I understand, the promoter claimed that he had told him that he had issues at the border that he needed to get cleared up, and then they found out that Jarrett purchased a ticket and flew home. Now there's a report, I think it was from Pro Wrestling Sheet earlier today, or it may have been yesterday. I think it was earlier today. I believe that, yeah, I think it was earlier today, Pro Wrestling Sheet had the story that he has checked himself into a rehab facility, which, I mean, wrestling aside, that's obviously good to hear. If he's battling a problem, hopefully he can get past it, and it seems like he's acknowledged that he needs help, and that's a good thing. But yeah, if you've missed, the video was online. It was circulating online earlier this week, and I sort of agree with you. I don't think they were left with much of a choice when you see what happened in the video. And again, this also is on the heels of an alleged incident that happened, I think, at Triple Mania, if we remember. Same type of thing. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is twice now in a couple of months where the same thing has happened. So not only do I think it's pretty clear that he needs to get some help, and it's good to see that he's doing that, I don't think it left Anthem with much of a choice in terms of moving forward. I mean, maybe the door's open for him to return at some point, but they really were not left with many options, I think.
No, and it is really unfortunate. I've always been pulling for Jarrett to make this company succeed in some form. It was cool to see him back into the fold and kind of getting his vision back together of this promotion and doing some exciting things. But then, of course, as time went along, we started hearing about things behind the scenes weren't going so great with him. And it's really unfortunate how that's all played out. It is great to see that he is getting help right now. This is just another gigantic mess for the company as a whole. And it's just kind of sad, really, where everything is at right now.
Where do you think they go from here? In terms of who's going to run the day-to-day wrestling operations of the company, because it was Jeff Jarrett. He was sort of running the wrestling operations. I mean, do you think it's John Gaborik? I mean, I know politically it sounds like he's put himself in a good position. Do you think it's John Gaborik? Do you think it's somebody else, Dutch Mantel, maybe Scott D'Amore, somebody from the outside maybe? Who do you sort of see as maybe being the guy that ends up coming in and sort of taking over?
I mean, the best answer would be somebody from the outside. This team that they put together has had very mixed results over well over a decade at this point. But I would say that D'Amore is probably going to make a power play, or he might be the guy that's next in line after Gaborik. I don't know. Maybe I'm just looking too much into it due to his Canadian roots and his increasing presence on air. He's on, you know, multiple points every episode where he wasn't even a few months ago. So I'm guessing he's going to be leaned on. I don't know how close he is with Mantel, so I don't know if Mantel's going to be around a long time. Cornette was close with Jarrett, and that's how he got in, but he's already gone due to, I guess, probably some other circumstances. But that would be my guess. D'Amore, maybe running creative with Gaborik, maybe above him, kind of like how it was a few years ago. But what do you kind of think?
Yeah, I wonder, you know, politically, I wonder if somebody's put themselves in position with management to sort of be that go-to contact. I could see them. I mean, someone that maybe is a little uneducated. I don't know how much Ed Nordholm knows about people's pasts, but, you know, Dixie Carter was always very much in the sense that if you used to work for WWE, Dixie Carter thought that you could work for her and run her company. So from that standpoint, you know, I wonder if John Gaborik takes on a little more of a more prominent role. He seemed to be the one that was gaining a lot of power under Dixie Carter too. So, you don't know. He's one of the few backstage personnel, one of the few behind the scenes guys that's still there from the old regime, from the old ownership. So, my gut says, you know, that I think he's probably going to work himself into power. I'm not particularly excited about that, but that's right. My read on it is that, you know, he may work himself into some power, especially, I mean, when Jeff was taken out of creative, who was the first person they went to? You know, they went right to John Gaborik. You know, that's who we heard was mm-hmm. sort of taken over. So that's where it feels like they're going.
Yeah, it's a shame because that did not work at all a couple of years ago. I think it was the 2015 era on Destination America. We've talked before. That was just one of the weakest. There was zero vision going on at the time. And it was just a boring, flat product. I mean, ideally, I would love to see them, say, make a play for, like, Jimmy Jacobs, now that he's free, get him on the creative team and maybe get him to wrestle. But due to their money situation, I don't even know if that's feasible. Otherwise, I would just love to see them try somebody else, like a Raven or somebody that just has a great mind for the business. Conan has a good mind for the business. There's just so many people out there, but they just don't probably play the political game right. So it'll probably just be Gaburik, I would guess, or Damore, or maybe Bruce Pritchard will be brought back. We have no idea what happened to him from on-air or off-air standpoint. So it's going to be interesting, but I wish I could be more hopeful. I mean, this is really bad what we're seeing right now, so I hope it gets better, but I don't think it's going to get good anytime soon.
Yeah, and that's sort of my worry too. I mean, you just look at the build to Bound for Glory, which I'm sure we'll talk about because it's one of the things that we both from reading Twitter, it was one of the things that we both sort of looked at from this episode. I mean, there just doesn't seem to be a whole lot of steam behind this. I mean, that you're going into, like you've said, your WrestleMania. This is supposed to be your WrestleMania. And I mean, other than the Moose match with American Top Team, and I think, you know, maybe the LAX match, I mean, I don't feel like there's a whole lot of heat behind the world title match, and everything else is just sort of there. I mean, the build to this pay-per-view has been almost non-existent, at least for a lot of matches. It's just, I don't get it, you know? I mean, my biggest takeaway tonight, where they were bouncing around all these different arenas, is, hey, you know what, that works. You can do that, but it needs to make sense, and it needs to build towards your pay-per-view right now. You know, this show tonight, to me, felt like something that we would see in the middle of July. And if this show was in the middle of July, it would have been fine. You're building up individual talent. You're showing some good matches internationally. Like, okay, cool, fine. But you've got a pay-per-view in 10 days. And not enough of this show was about building that pay-per-view. It just doesn't make the pay-per-view feel like it's going to be a big deal. They're not treating it like it's a big deal.
No, it's, you know, last week we kind of said we kind of agreed that was the worst episode of the year. This was, for me, bottom six or seven. It just so random. Nothing. I had this thought tonight, like, if you tried to introduce somebody to this product, it would be insane. Like, you know, they would ask, like, well, why are they here right now? Who is this? Oh, I don't know. I don't know why they're there. You know, just everything doesn't have an answer to it. They just jump from one place to the next. And it's really frustrating, and it's just bizarre that they book the shows this way. Because, I mean, they would show Jeremy Borash cutting to these matches, but why would they do this, you know, when they shot this stuff a month and a half ago? Why did they think this was a good idea to put all these matches, you know, 2 weeks before their biggest show of the year? And it's just, I'm very curious why that decision was made, if they're missing out on some content, if they didn't shoot enough stuff. But it's leading into a really, really lackluster show.
Yeah, and that's, it feels like to me that they probably had to fill some holes with Jarrett being gone. I mean, you and I talked about that. I think that's, you know, I think that's a definite, that's definitely going on here. But it just feels like there's a lot of that. You know, too much to just be filler for one thing. The other thing that struck me too is we've sort of gone on Jeremy Borash and Josh Matthews for their commentary at times, but they were sort of put in a bad spot tonight. I thought, especially in the Eddie Edwards Marufuji match, which, by the way, looked like it was damn good match. I mean, if you saw the whole thing, it looked like it was a really good match. And I understand why, you know, from a time constraint standpoint, they didn't show the whole thing. But you've got Matthews and Borash calling it as if it were live, with the match just jumping ahead, you know, because it was clearly just segments of the match. The one part that really sticks out is at one point they're on the floor. I think Marufuji hit a dive through the ropes, and both guys are on the floor, and Jeremy Borash, you know, literally says something to the effect of, you know, and now both men on the floor after the big dive from Marufuji, and then immediately it cut to them on the apron, and he just had to go, and now on the apron, Eddie Edwards, and it just, I mean, it was like they teleported to the apron, because they just cut ahead. So it just, it looked choppy, it looked clunky. The stuff from Border City Wrestling did not look like it. I mean, it obviously didn't have the production value of the other territories or the Impact Zone, so that looked dingy and dark. On paper, I mean, on paper, I think the concept is a good idea. But they've not executed it well.
No, not at all. And I don't mind the idea of, I think if you do it more than once, it's overkill. I don't mind you could hype that up. This week, we're going to AAA. This week, we're going to Border City. You know, really play that up a week in advance. Let us know who's fighting who. But they're not doing that at all. Like every match tonight, it just aired. We didn't know who was there. We didn't know if there was any actual storylines between them. So it just felt like these prolonged squash matches, really, which kind of defeats the purpose. I mean, if you're not going to tell us who these guys are, then why do it? Again, like you said, I think it can be a good idea, but the way it plays out is just it's more jarring and confusing than anything.
Exactly. Yeah, I just thought it was jarring, I think, is the best way to put it. All right, let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll get to phone calls at 515-605-9345. We can also get your emails at impactlivecast@gmail.com. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to the PW Torch Livecast Post Impact Show.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
All right, back here in the PW Torch Livecast. Before we get to phone calls, let's go to the inbox. And Tony in New Jersey emails us again. Tony's been a regular emailer, and you can email the show, like I said, at impactlivecast@gmail.com. Tony says, for me, Eli Drake was the most entertaining thing about tonight's episode. It's his personality and talking ability is top-notch in Impact Wrestling. You know how I feel about watching all these matches in other arenas, but the dumb part about that is the champions are defending their belts in other countries, and we know that they aren't losing the titles. It's a good point. Overall, I wasn't a fan of this episode except the end with Moose and Lashley in the brawl, but unlike most wrestling fans, I don't give a thumbs up because the ending was good. He says, P.S., I really hope the fans of the Impact Zone get more wrestling in the arena than they actually show on TV. Otherwise, shame on Impact Wrestling for stealing their fans' money. Well... first of all, those fans aren't paying any money to get into the show, so that's good news. And you know, I'm sure that they tape more than you know. They're taping. I'm not sure they're even taping in sequential order, but he brings up a good point. I mean, we know they're not losing their titles in these matches, which is kind of silly. That also sort of brings you out of it a little bit. You don't feel like, I mean, the whole show was taped, but those matches, you almost know you're not watching something that's live. Whereas if you're watching a complete episode in the Impact Zone, you can at least simulate the feeling of being live, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, completely agree about that. And kind of just going back to, if you do it more than once, it really just feels like, I don't know, just feels like you're watching like bad YouTube videos at points. It doesn't work the way that they're executing this. I agree. It's not working.
Yeah. And I think it's a good idea. Like on paper, mm-hmm. I understand why you would have looked at this when they came up with it and said, hey, this could work. And I get it, but the execution of it so far has been ugly to say the least. And part of it, I think, especially is the jarring, of going from arena to arena and seeing these different production values. I mean, the Crash is okay. Pro Wrestling, Noah, and AAA, they're all okay in terms of production value. But like Border City Wrestling just looked completely out of sorts when you compared it to how the rest of the show looked.
Yeah, that just... I know they needed time to fill, but that just shouldn't be on a national show. It just makes them look so low budget showing that. I mean, the Impact Zone is never going to compete with WWE. It never has, but it works in its own right. And it usually looks better than, like, say, Ring of Honor does. So it has its place and it has a distinct look to it. But yeah, the Border City stuff doesn't work. And just going to his point about Eli Drake, completely agree with that. He's one of the few things that stood out to me tonight. He continues to really come into his own. It seems he's getting more confident. He's getting his character down more. And yeah, just one of the few highlights in this promotion right now.
Yeah, I agree. One more bit about the bouncing around from building to building. The tag match from Border City Wrestling with OVE against, I think it was Pete Atlas and Brent Edwards, maybe? I don't recall the guy's name. But anyway, that match almost felt like it wasn't initially intended to air on Impact, only because OVE was selling for most of the match. And that makes sense. I mean, if you're visiting a promotion, you've got a hometown tag team that's going to be sticking around, yeah, OVE is going to win, but you put the guys that are from there over by giving them control of most of the match, and then, you know, OVE sneaks out and win at the end. So that felt to me like that match may have been filler. Maybe that match wasn't supposed to air on Impact because, you know, if it was, I don't get the logic behind taking your babyface tag team champions who are going to have a street fight against five people at Bound for Glory in 10 days. What's the logic between having two guys that we've never heard of before basically beat them up for 5 or 6 minutes and they squeak out a win in the end? It just doesn't make any sense. You know, who's going to pay to see OVE, who barely squeaks by these indie guys that nobody's ever heard of? Who's going to pay to see them fight five people in a street fight at Bound for Glory if they barely sneak past these two guys that no one's ever heard of before? So that to me felt weird. And then the other point I wanted to make before we move on and get to some phone calls, I don't think, as much as I think it's, again, a good idea on paper, I don't think it's a good look for Impact when you look at Pro Wrestling Noah, you look at AAA, you look at Crash, even Border City Wrestling. All of those crowds looked like they were bigger than what Impact was drawing in the Impact Zone. And yeah, the production values in Orlando were better, but I don't think it looks good when the parent company, the one that we're supposed to be, you know, watching and getting behind, is the least attended of any of the ones that you're showing. It just, I don't think it's a good look.
That is a good point. And it's not just that. They're, like, way more excited for their own product than the Impact Zone is for Impact. So it's kind of a double whammy there. I mean, yeah, it'd be one thing if it was like WWE, like being able to cut back and forth. But yeah, every place they go to is 2, 3, 4, 5 times better attended. And just kind of going back to that Border City match again, like in my mind, I would have rather seen 5, 6, 7 minutes worth of promos, you know, building up Bound for Glory, like flying the knockouts, you know, or flying the X Division wrestlers, you know, to fill in that time to really put over their matches instead of just showing something that looks so bad, because that perception hurts the company as opposed to like getting these upcoming matches over and trying to get people to buy the shows. Like that did absolutely nothing to get people to want to order Bound for Glory. It made no sense. We didn't know who these guys are. We will likely never, ever see them again. So it just like existed in a vacuum that could have taken place at any point over the past year, really. I would have left that out completely.
I mean, I'm looking at the card for Bound for Glory right now. And Trevor Lee was on the show, but they didn't do anything to hype his X Division title match at Bound for Glory.
Do we even know who's in that from yet? Like from on air, have they said?
You know, I'm looking at the card on Wikipedia, so I'm not sure that they've said it yet. I don't know if it's a spoiler, so I don't even really want to mention it. But he's defending the title at Bound for Glory. It was not mentioned. Sienna versus Allie versus Gail Kim, a match that was not mentioned on this show. Grado versus Abyss, a match that was not mentioned. Rosemary versus Taya Valkyrie, a match that was not mentioned. So they gave some hype to Eli Drake versus Johnny Impact. They gave some hype to OVE versus LAX. They gave hype to Moose and Bonner against Lashley and King Mo. And then they gave some hype with the opening match of Team Impact versus Team AAA. But that's 4 matches out of an 8-match card. So half the card, you're 10 days out from the pay-per-view, and half the card was not even discussed It was not brought up at all. And you're 10 days out from a pay-per-view. And look, I get it. Those are, for the most part, undercard matches, and people, and they're right. The pay-per-view is going to sell. It's going to live or die on the top matches, and the top matches were given attention on the show. But I think the point is you take some of those matches that maybe didn't mean anything. You know, again, Eddie Edwards versus Marufuji, it looked like it was a really good match if we saw the whole thing. That could have been replaced with something promoting Rosemary Taya Valkyrie or something to promote the pay-per-view. I thought, like you, that a lot of the things that they went to, you know, even Trevor Lee, the Trevor Lee match didn't promote the pay-per-view at all. It had nothing to do with Bound for Glory. They didn't mention what he was going to be doing at Bound for Glory. They mentioned that he was going to get ready for Bound for Glory. I think Josh Matthews said that a couple times. But in there was no mention of what he was doing. So take that time. Take that 10 minutes, whatever it was, or 11 or 12 minutes, and do something to build up your undercard instead of spending time on things that don't have anything to do with the pay-per-view.
Yeah, completely agree. I mean, there's no way you could give them any sort of passing grade for this effort. It would like have to be an F because, like you said, they didn't even cut to a video package at any point of Abyss and Grado. And this is Gail Kim's last match. I mean, of course, this is wrestling. She could always come back, but she's been saying this is it. And they can't even bother to mention that a single time, their most popular woman wrestler ever. It's, again, I said this last week, but everyone in creative should just be ashamed of themselves for putting this on TV. And because people are trying hard. There's a lot of good talent in this company. And again, just creative's just completely incapable of running this promotion.
I agree. Totally. I mean, the booking team feels like it's completely lost. And you know, something else that I quickly want to bring up, and I promise we will get to phone calls at 515-605-9345. But I had this in my notes, and I didn't want to forget to bring it up. There's another podcast out there that covers Impact called the King of the Mountain podcast, and I listen to it every once in a while. It's run by a guy named BQ. And I actually, you know what, I think he does more YouTube videos now than podcasts, but he brought up a good point on something this week, which is another point we could get to. We talked last week about Taryn Terrell supposedly being out of that match after suffering a slap. Well, it was, I think, a dig at her because we learned last Friday that she's been released from the company. But in any event, this guy BQ, he had put out a video in response to that, just talking about Taryn Terrell leaving the company. He's been a big fan of Taryn Terrell, and one of the points he brought up in the video, and he's exactly right. Part of the problem right now, and this goes back to creative and the booking committee, every single set of television tapings has had a different direction. I mean, there has not been one. The roster has been different. There's been like a different direction and some new thing that's going to change the face of Impact forever at every set of television tapings. First, they changed the name from TNA to Impact. Then they went to GFW, and then they were merging titles. And then this one, how many people have returned and left in the last 3 or 4 months? Low Key, Taryn Terrell. I mean, there's no consistent direction at all. And it was a point that I hadn't really thought of, but I thought it was a really good point by him that, you haven't had a consistent roster from taping to taping, let alone a consistent direction.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, we've given throughout TNA's history, there's been a lot of bad stuff, but it's at least been more consistent from a pure wrestler standpoint. And that should be a very, very, very low bar to clear to have the same characters on roughly every show or every other week. But yeah, I mean, it's complete madness how many people, I mean, if you go back even further, Matt Morgan completely disappeared off the face of the earth.
Magnus.
And of course, yeah, Magnus, it's just Jeff Jarrett showed up. He disappeared. Del Rio, I guess, was at least given a send off, but he's like the only one. Otherwise, everyone else.
I mean, even Bruce Prichard.
Who's going to show up? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Nothing ever came of that. So it basically just enforces this message that don't pay attention or don't get invested because these people might be here next week. They might not. And if they are, they might not have anything really going on. It's just impossible right now for somebody to get invested in this product on an emotional level.
You're right. And that's the problem. and that's what they need right now. But they need to find some traction. They need to sort of stop the ball from rolling downhill, I think, before they can start pushing it back up. But let's get to phone calls. We got to get to another break here in a minute, but let's get to some phone calls. Let's go first to Cody in Louisiana. Cody, what's up with you on this Thursday?
Guys.
Cody, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, there you are. What's on your mind? Oh, looks like Cody just dropped off. Something wrong with his phone. Uh-huh. So, Cody, if you want to call back, we will we'll get you back on at 515-605-9345. Let's go next to Ryan in Maryland.
Yeah. First question I have for you. I think I misunderstood how the booking was going for the woman. I thought the plan was for a girl, Kim, to win the title at Bound for Glory, then for her to possibly do a job to Taya Valkyrie, since the tapings are that being Canada, since Josh Matthews told us that Taya Valkyrie would be the champion by the end of the year.
That could be. You know, I know Gail has talked about Bound for Glory being her last match, but if she wins the title, then, you know, I like you said, she's going to be there. They're taping TV right after Bound for Glory. They could easily have her do a couple of title defenses and have it end with Taya Valkyrie winning the championship before that set of tapings is done. Because, you know, they could get to a point where she could win the title at the TV taping, but it wouldn't air till December or something like that. But, Andrew, do you think that's could be a direction they go in with Gail winning the title and ultimately dropping it to Taya Valkyrie? I think that's a good way to go if you're trying to get her over as the next star in that division.
Yeah, if they're going to keep her around, then for sure. I would just hate to see her disappear a week after, Gail Kim putting her over. They have been saying that that's going to be her finale. But, of course, I just said it a few minutes ago, but this is wrestling. She could sure stick around, and I'm fine either way. We've also talked about that in the past. If she goes out with the title, I think that's fine because nobody else can really touch her for her. Importance to that division, or, of course, you always want to put over the next generation. So I think either way works. I guess I don't know for sure which way they are leaning right now, or if she's set on putting somebody else over and winning that title. I think either way works.
My second question is about the show tonight. Was it the original plan for them to show family matches from Canada and Mexico, or did they have to possibly edit out some of those matches because some of their stars have left and are no longer with the company, or maybe they moved those matches to Explosion since they didn't have a lot of eyeballs on talent that might have left the company, such as Terry Carrell and Low Key and some other people?
That's the question. You know, I don't think we know for sure. My guess would be is that this is filler, you know, that they had some other things they were planning on airing and that they've had to go to some of these tape things to fill the gap in television. Because, you know, originally the plan was El Patron was going to take on Jeff Jarrett. Now, instead of that, it's just been videos hyping, you know, what is El Patron going to do when he comes to Bound for Glory? So I'm sure there were promos or angles or video packages or something filmed with Jeff Jarrett and El Patron to hype that match. Now you don't have that. So that would have figured to be one of the top two or three matches on the card. So they would have, I would assume, dedicated a lot of time to putting some hype behind that match. So it could be that there is a lot to fill, you know, and even if it seems to me, Andrew, too, that it's been over the last couple of weeks that we've noticed this filler, and that could have been because this is the time when the hype for that Jarrett El Patron match really would have kicked in. But that's my guess, Ryan, is that it was not originally intended to be this way when they come out of that television taping. I think that they're filling in, whether it's for Jeff Jarrett or whether it's for, like you said, some Low-Key matches, that because Low-Key's sort of disappeared without, you know, a trace and not a mention. Whether it's Low-Key, whether it's Jeff Jarrett, I think they're patching some holes with some of this content right now. Andrew, do you sort of agree there?
Yeah, I feel the only one they would really bother to patch, though, is Jeff Jarrett. Because if Low-Key goes out there and has a match, I don't think that would really affect things either way, unless he left under bad circumstances and they just want him off of TV altogether. But yeah, I mean, it was just it was weird to go to all those matches because, again, we have even no idea when they were shot. For all I know, that Eddie Edwards match could have been 3 months ago, and it's just been sitting there on the shelf to be inserted into a show for something like this. So it definitely feels like something was missing from that show. But yeah, I would guess it was mainly just the Jarrett stuff that was being left out.
And is it pretty much a lock that Eli Drake still won the match since Josh Matthews told us he was the win because he's been spot on lately?
I don't know. I think they could go in a number of different directions there. I'm not even 100% convinced at this point that it's going to stay Eli Drake versus Johnny Impact. With El Patron coming back and he was stripped of the title, I think they could, you know, you could potentially work that in and make it a triple threat if they really wanted to. I also think that, you know, that just could be the storyline for that next set of television tapings as well, is that, you know, they come out and say, hey, we're going to go with El Patron's redemption story kind of coming out of for the Impact tapings coming out of Bound for Glory. Andrew, what do you think they do there from the world title perspective? Do you think they go with Eli Drake, or do you think they change the title of Bound for Glory?
It's so hard to predict at this point. I would not say it's a lock by any means of Josh Matthews, just because of all the backstage turmoil. I mean, this isn't like WrestleMania where we can look at the past and just be like, well, the babyface has a 95% chance of winning to close the show, because we know how Vince McMahon kind of thinks and feels about that. Like, we don't really know who's in charge right now. We don't know contract situations. For all I know, you know, Johnny Impact, this might be his last show. I mean, or he could be here for 2 years. So, yeah, I'm not convinced either that it's just Drake Mundo. And actually, I don't even think I'd mind at this point if Patron came in and, you know, because we've already seen Mundo, or I keep calling him Mundo, Impact and Patron. So, yeah, I mean, I would bet slightly that Eli Drake would win, but I would not be comfortable for sure saying that's how it's going to play out.
If I had a hope, I would hope that Eli Drake wins, because I do think he's done a pretty good job.
Yep. Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Rich Fan, formerly of the Primetime Friday Laughcast with Bruce Mitchell here. I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes, places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here, because Saturday nights on the live cast are officially all right for diving.
Again, you can join us at 515-605-9345. And Andrew, I just looked it up here online. To answer your question, Eddie Edwards versus Mara Fuji took place on October 1st in Yokohama.
Really?
So that match is about a month old. According to cagematch.net, it went 26 minutes and 14 seconds. So that's why, I mean, that's why we didn't get the whole thing, obviously. But you know what, though, at the same time, they could have made that a 12-minute match with a commercial break in between. You know, I forget exactly how many minutes they devoted it to on the show, but they could have easily gone. I mean, they go to commercial break in the middle of every match, and I talked last week how much I hate it. I think it's stupid. But they could have easily aired the first 7 or 8 minutes, go to commercial, or the first 3 minutes, go to commercial, and then come back and air the last 9, and everything that happened in between just happened during the commercial break, and you really wouldn't have known the difference. I think you could have done it that way, gotten the same amount of time out of it, and not have had this jerky type of thing with randomly cutting to further points in the match. Just felt really, really jarring. It was hard to pay attention.
I would have rather have just seen that match then. Do that 26 minutes and get rid of all the other matches.
Yeah, I could have done that too.
That are in different promotions. Yeah, and just throughout the show, really have Jeremy Borash Josh Matthews, oh, like just, oh my God, this is one of the best matches you'll see all year. Like, you can't believe this. You got to see this. So I think that would have built up more goodwill than just jumping all over the place and damaging storylines and not moving any other storylines forward. Of course, this isn't, because Eddie Edwards, I don't think, has a match at the show, but it at least would have been more fun to watch, I guess.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Cody's back on the line. Cody in Louisiana.
Hey, can you guys hear me?
Oh, much better now. Yeah, I'm not sure what happened there the last time.
Yeah, me neither. That was really weird. But good, it's good to talk to you guys again. Very confusing episode of Impact tonight. First off, going back to y'all first point about Jeff Jarrett, I agree with you guys. I think this is really starting to mess with their own productions, and it's really starting to kick them in the butt. Because you really have, like you said, Mike, I think on paper it's a good idea to have all those different the show taking place in all different kinds of different arenas. It kind of brings back that old school WrestleMania 2 vibe where you had matches in three different arenas. On paper it looks right. But they just executed it poorly, like you said. First off, in the tag team match between EC3, James Storm, and Phantasma and Tejano. Well, first off, I don't watch Lucha Libre, so I don't know how different the rules are from American style, WWE style, Impact style, whatever you want to call it. And so to hear Jeremy Borash or Josh Matthews, one of those two guys, I can't remember who, say that the rules are a little bit more relaxed. Okay, that doesn't tell me much. Okay, like coming from somebody that's never watched a Lucha Libre match, you need to tell me exactly how the rules are different than running a match in the Impact Zone or running a match in Greensboro or something like that. And then, you know, you have all these outside matches when first off, Matt Sydal is on your roster. Desmond Xavier is on your roster. Grado and Abyss are on your roster. And you're telling me that you don't have a place for them on a show. Not to mention the fact that I'm sure you guys caught this. There were zero women segments on the show. Zero. Like, you had 30 seconds of Laurel Van Ness almost breaking underage child drinking laws. And that was it. Like, you have Gail Kim, Rosemary, Taya Valk, all these great women wrestlers on your show, and you put zero of them on your show tonight. And then not to mention the fact that, first off, another thing that I noticed was that you bring Dutch Mantel back on the show after weeks of not being there, and you expect me to care about where he's been or how he's doing. You know, you could have done that whole segment with Jim Cornette. I just feel like the whole situation seemed really, really out of place.
Yeah, the whole show felt like it was out of place. you know, like, it's almost like they're not aware they have a pay-per-view in 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Going back to the main event, also, it's very, very strange. Like, why? I understand that you're building up King Mo and Lashley versus Moose and Stephen Bonner. And by the way, you know, I'm becoming more and more of a fan of Moose by the day. My girlfriend, who just started watching wrestling with me, loves Moose. She's been sending me Moose memes and like all different kinds of stuff. All different kinds after I told her that Moose was wrestling tonight. But why in the world would you put Moose versus Lashley on free television? If anything, that's a main event pay-per-view caliber match. Arguably two of the biggest stars in the company, arguably the biggest feud in the company between Moose and Lashley. Do you guys agree with how they put Moose and Bobby Lashley in the main event tonight?
Andrew, what do you think there?
Completely agree. I mean, that's one of the biggest matches they can do. We've seen it before, but it's been a couple months. And just the fact that they have no other creative ideas to build towards a match than to give you a large preview of that match. Yeah, they shouldn't be giving that away. It was probably easily the highlight of the show, but it definitely deserved a bigger build. It should have been on a bigger show. It should have been on a show that wasn't awful and random and all over the place. But yeah, it definitely deserved more than what it got.
And also, where was King Mo in the show? You had three quarters of that tag team match there. Mm-hmm. You had all of American Top Team there, but where's King Mo? Did you guys notice that too?
Yeah, I did. I especially when they made their run, and it's like, you know, the entire all of American Top Team is there with the exception of King Mo, the guy who's supposed to be in the match. that felt real weird.
Yeah.
And you know, there's another thing that came up too. Stefan Bonner mentioned that in his promo that King Mo was quote unquote trying to steal his spotlight. Like, where does that come from? Like, where did that ever come from?
I have no idea.
In the narrative. Where in the narrative does Stefan Bonner and King Mo have a beef with each other?
Like, yeah, they're manufacturing heat.
Stefan Bonner.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, Stefan Bonner was called by Moose because Moose needed help, not because King Mo was talking smack about Stefan Bonner. It's another example of it being of the show being all over the place. And I. You know, if you're talking about who's running creative right now, like I'm almost at my rope's end with pretty much everybody in charge right now. Like I'd give some leeway if it was Scott DeMort trying to run the company. In fact, it was pretty interesting to see a segment on the show with Dutch and Jim Cornette being essentially talked down to by Scott DeMore, who's saying, hey, we have a business to run. And so if there's anybody that needs to go, personally, I think it's John Gaborik. First off, if your name is not John McCarthy, you know, the referee from the UFC, you should not have the prefix big in your name. Okay. Because that's, and personally, I'm hoping that, you know, that Jedi Master Kylan from New Jersey predicts John Gaborik to be gone within the next 6 months.
Well, you Kylan's know, on the line, so we can ask.
Oh, yeah, he'll know.
Kylan, if you're listening, if you can find it in your infinite wisdom to try to predict John Gaborik being gone, I would very much appreciate it. Because like, I tell you what, he's been spot on with some of the stuff that he said on the show.
Oh, he has been, absolutely.
But like I said, just a complete mess, especially with Bound for Glory being 10 days away. It's hard to tell if and when they're going to fix their problems, and especially if they're going to bring back Alberto El Patron, who you guys mentioned possibly putting him in the main event to make it a triple threat match as possibly a redemption story. I don't want to see an Alberto El Patron redemption story.
Oh, neither do I.
Not after, but like,
yeah.
I mean, because you guys have said it before in the past. Like, there's a reason why people get cut from WWE or get cut from larger promotions. You know, Impact gets all these talent, expecting them to do big things, but really they're either on vacation or they run into problems with the law, this, that, and the other. It's just absolute garbage mess.
Yeah, I don't think you can bring El Patron back at this point unless he's a heel. I would advocate not bringing him back at all. I think you've had enough bad PR as it is, and it's probably just a matter of time until he does something to give you more bad PR again. It seems to be something that happens over and over and over with him, but I don't know what you think, Andrew. I mean, I think if you're going to bring him back at all, at least bring him back as a heel so that people can boo him. You know, I think bringing a guy back with his checkered history and putting him in position where he's supposed to be your top babyface is a catastrophic mistake.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I only argued for him maybe joining the main event just due to his star power and because we haven't seen that match before. I'm with Mike that, and I guess both of you guys, that I probably wouldn't have brought him back at all, but if you're going to, it should be as a heel due to his real life circumstances and the ill will he has from getting booted from the company for a bit, and just the fact that he's a much better heel than a babyface. I mean, go back and watch his WWE babyface stuff, it was terrible.
And at least it makes logical sense.
Wasn't good at it.
Yeah, makes logical sense to put him in that title match too. I mean, if you follow if you're using a storyline narrative here, he was the champion. He was stripped of the title. He never lost it. It would make sense to have him in that match.
Yeah, agreed.
One last thing before I go. Judging by that backstage promo between Cornette and Dutch Ventel, do you think they're going to try to screw over Eli Drake in the main event? Maybe possibly by putting El Patron in there or by some other means. Excuse me, sorry. It just seemed from what it looked like, it looks like they're trying to plot something because they don't, you know, they just don't like Eli Drake that much. But to be honest, you know, Eli Drake has a point in some of what he's doing or some of what he's saying, partially because, well, all he cares about is making money, winning championships, which, you know, Wade said, you know, said countless times, and I'm sure you guys have said as well, that's, you know, that should be the goal for wrestlers to be in the business, is to make money and win championships. You know, the other guys might have a point, Cornette and Mantel, if they're trying to promote stuff. And, you know, there is a business side to that, but that's fine. But it just seems like if you know, even if they don't like Eli Drake, they should still not be trying to screw him out of winning, out of keeping the championship. Because it's bad booking. Like, you want, like, if anything, you want to try to stack the odds against the babyface, which, you know, in this case is Johnny Impact. What do you guys thoughts on that?
Yeah, last I checked, Jim Cornette and Dutch Mantel weren't heels. but screwing someone out of a championship, it was the authority, you know. And like you said, that's exactly what it looked like they were doing. Because Jim Cornette said something to the effect of, "Hey, if you know Eli Drake's not our champion after Bound for Glory, this isn't something we have to worry about." And Dutch Mantel goes, "You know, yeah, that's a very good point." Starts writing something down. So, yeah, that's where I think they were going with it. Obviously, Cornette's not going to be involved at Bound for Glory, so don't know what his involvement, you know, in the future of the company will be. Doesn't look like it's going to be anything right now. But Dutch will probably be there, and. You know, I think we'll see how it plays out. I could certainly see an angle where they get the title off Eli Drake, and it's the people in charge screwing them to do it. I think that ultimately turns Eli Drake babyface, and I'm not sure that that's really where they should go with him right now. But that could be a road they're heading down. Andrew, what do you think there?
I mean, on one hand, it would be good if there was some sort of payoff to this, because this whole marketing angle was ridiculous to start up 10 days before the show. Like, who cares if he doesn't go to those events? He's not going to wrestle Dutch Mantel.
Not to mention,
that's going to happen.
They publicized the fact that they sent him to a press conference less than a week ago.
Yeah. That's a great point.
He's not going to do marketing, but we just sent him to Canada for a press conference that we put on all of our social media accounts on our website 6 days ago.
I think turning him would be a terrible, terrible idea. I guess you could do a double turn. Impact's better as a heel, but Eli Drake is doing the best work in the company right now, so I just wouldn't mess with that how it is. So. Man, I just really hope not, because that authority team, nobody wants to see them in a prominent position as heels.
Oh, I agree absolutely. I mean, if y'all recall, like weeks ago, I said that, you know, I don't like seeing Karen Jett on television. I don't like seeing Bruce Pritchard on television. Even like this week, Dutch Mantel showing up for no apparent reason, other than to. You know, do something that Jim Cornette could have done himself. So as far as that whole thing goes, I would just say keep Scott DeMore on thin ice, get rid of John Gaborik, start looking for somebody else. But that's really all I got for you guys tonight. I'll catch you guys on the flip side.
Awesome.
Sounds good. Thanks for the call. You know, it's interesting too, because you brought up John Gaborik, and it's almost the thing that scares me if he's in charge of creative is, you know, those authority angles with the authority figures being the centralized mm-hmm. focus of the show. That's what he knows. Ooh. I mean, that's where he comes from.
Yeah.
That's scary. No, I'm sorry.
I could have my timelines wrong. Oh, yeah, I could have my timelines wrong, but I would say bottom three worst storylines in TNA history was Dixie Carter. Heel Dixie Carter versus heel MVP, and that was kind of around that era that John Gaberic was in charge. So, God, anything like that again is not what they need right now.
I agree. Let's go to another break. When we come back, we'll get some more of your phone calls at 515-605-9345. You're listening to the PW Torch Livecast.
Don't just listen to PW Torch's brand of wrestling coverage. Read it, too, every day at pwtorch.com. Join me Monday nights for my live coverage of Raw, Tuesday nights for my live coverage of SmackDown, Sunday nights for my live coverage of WWE pay-per-views, and keep up on the news and read exclusive editorials and special features every day at pwtorch.com.
All right, back here in the PW Torch Livecast, 515-605-9345. Mike McMahon and Andrew Socek with you. When we are done with this, we'll hit over to our VIP after show, talking the big invasion angle this week between Raw and SmackDown, and also what the hell they're doing with Finn Balor, because what a confusing week it was for him. But let's get back to the phone calls at 515-605-9345. Also, our top three this week later in the show. Andrew and I will bring you our top three Bound for Glory main events in Bound for Glory history. But let's go back to the phone calls, and this is, as Cody put it, the Jedi Master himself, Kylan in New Jersey. Kylan, what's up?
Bring us good news.
Not much. How are you and Andrew this week, Mike?
I think we're doing pretty good.
Doing all right. Yeah.
That's great. I will try my best to live up to Cody's very interesting and kind proclamation of me this week. I'm not so sure I have enough magic powers to magically whisk John Gaberic away from a job that all of us know that he doesn't necessarily deserve. But we'll see what happens. Anyway, my questions for this week all have to do, fortunately or unfortunately, with behind-the-scenes matters, as is usually the case most weeks with this particular program. My first question is, if you guys caught this, why is Impact still using the Global Force Wrestling signature in its opening when the recently ousted Jeff Jarrett owns everything to do with the Global Force Wrestling trademarks and brand?
I've noticed they are still using that opening, which you're right. They've taken the GFW logo out of it. So my guess is that all those television partnerships are deals that were cut through Anthem. So Anthem owns those partnerships. Anthem probably owns the contracts, the television deals with those various networks. So my assumption, and again, I'm not a lawyer or anything, of course, but my assumption is that they own them, so they can still say that they're theirs. I mean, Jeff Jarrett doesn't have television deals to start airing his own GFW show on these international markets. Those are clearly done. Those are done through Impact, and Impact, it's a company, owns those deals. So I think that's where it comes from. They figure, hey, this is still showcases us as a global company, even though the word global isn't involved in the name anymore. So why not go ahead and try to use that same graphic and showcase that. Andrew, have you noticed that too? I mean, it's the same opening. Kylan's right. It's the exact same opening. They just took the GFW logo out of it.
Yeah, I did notice that too. I think just like you said, I mean, they just want to show off who they're still with. They probably aren't going to pay somebody to create a new one at this point in time. So I think they're just going the cheapest, safest route, for the time being until they figure out something, to replace it with.
Yeah, that makes sense. My second question for this week is also in the vein of Jeff Jarrett. When Jeff does make it out of this apparently WWE-sponsored rehab facility, according to several sources, but mainly Pro Wrestling Sheet, which Mike did not mention that this is apparently a WWE sponsored facility Jeff is going into. But when Jeff does get out of this facility, do you think, since he still owns the Global Force wrestling name, that he will call, I don't know, Toby Keith or Kenny Rogers or Dolly Parton and say, hey, I had a wrestling company that I was running before that some guys in Canada bought off me, but I didn't sign all the paperwork because I wanted to keep the name just in case something happened, and something did, and I got sick, and now I'm ready to restart. Can you help me?
I think he'll do something. Yeah, I saw, I think it was in the Tennessean yesterday. He didn't want to go into specifics, but he released a quote to the Tennessean, the newspaper down there in Nashville. And he said, I think the quote was, he's been in the wrestling business 35 years and he has no plans on getting out. So, yeah, I guess the door is always open for him to potentially come back, but I think if he doesn't, he'll try to do something on his own again. That seems to be, that's been his MO for the last 15 years. So that's what I think we'll see him do. Andrew, do you think differently there?
No, I think he'll call Dolly Parton very soon. he's going to try. Yes, absolutely. He's going to probably try to call Toby Keith. I would hope even Toby Keith at this point knows that's not a good investment of his money. He doesn't have a TV deal. He just got kicked out. He's going to rehab. That's going to be a tough sell for anyone. I mean, but at this point also, like, well, what else is Jeff Jarrett going to say? He's not going to say like, oh yeah, I'm done with wrestling, I'm going to go be an accountant. No, like, it's kind of what he has to say. He's going to try his best to get something going. I'm sure he's made quite a bit of money. His dad, as far as I know, is still rich. Who knows there, but he'll try something somewhere, or maybe he'll just make nice with WWE and get a Legends deal and be able to, I don't know, make occasional appearances for them at autograph signings and stuff. So he'll be somewhere. I think his days as a major player are probably over, but I also would not be shocked if he does show up in Impact again. Just, I mean, you would have never predicted it the past two times. So who knows?
And my final question concerns the main event segment this week. Was it me, or was Josh Matthews either improvising or magically produced to turn himself babyface on commentary during the American Top Team beatdown, despite being a heel for the last 10 or so months on commentary?
Yeah, that was a weird one. You know, I almost liken it to what they were doing on Raw and SmackDown this week, where the announcers were just defending their brand. And, you know, even though Josh Matthews is kind of a heel, he was sticking up for Impact. And that's I think they were doing it more so to make to play up the Invasion storyline of the whole it's us against them type of thing, because he flip-flops a lot. But yeah, I noticed that as well. Andrew, what did you think there? I mean, we've been down on the announcers for months, but what did you think of that of that point in particular?
Yeah, that's kind of how I took it too. Is just like these are now outsiders because Lashley is I don't know. He was no longer with the company, so I don't know if they're still trying to play that up in a sense. But yeah, it's just. Which is weird because he was on Lashley's side not too long ago. So I chalk it up to just it doesn't make any sense, and there's nobody overseeing this thing to tell them to be consistent or to remember what they did 10 minutes ago at this point. So I wouldn't look too deeply into it because by the time the pay-per-view comes around, it could certainly change, and he'll just switch teams.
Yeah, anything is possible with this. Mm-hmm. Bunch of people running a company.
That's right.
I mean, for all I know, guys, don't listen to this because knowing some of you crazy people, one of you is going to think this is a genius idea, but next week they just might bring Vince Russo back and give us eight matches with everything on the pole.
Oh no!
Oh man!
But that's what's a little scary about the situation they're in right now is Ed Nordholm has admitted that he doesn't know much about wrestling, and you know, does someone like Vince Russo, who's a pretty charismatic guy. If he is able to get into his ear and convince him that he knows what he's doing. I mean, it does sound crazy, but like I could envision a scenario in which that actually happens. Cause especially where you have a guy in charge who says he doesn't really know.
He might just look at the ratings and be like, well, when was this show drawing a 1.2? You know, when was over a million people watching this? And that was largely Russo territory. So, yeah. I hope not. I don't think so. But, yes, don't rule out anything right now.
God, I hope I didn't just give Ed Lord many ideas.
Well, no offense, but I hope not, too.
Yeah.
All right, Kyle. Hey, we appreciate the phone call.
I'm glad I could lighten things up for you guys. We'll talk next week.
Have a good one.
Sounds good. All right. All right. So let's go to another break. When we come back, we'll quickly run down portions of the show that we haven't yet discussed. And then we'll get to our top three. So you're listening to the PW Torch Livecast here on PWTorchLivecast.com.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
All right, back here at the PW Torch Livecast. Let's, Andrew and I are going to quickly, because we're running out of time here a little bit, we'll quickly run through the segments that we haven't talked about, then we'll get to our top three. And then for VIP members, we'll head over to the VIP after show, talking some WWE topics. But they opened the show, Andrew, in Mexico, where EC3 and James Storm beat Phantasma and Tejano in about 8 minutes. And this was a weird match where these segments have been weird the last couple of weeks. But there was no dissension teased at all between Phantasma and Tejano for the first couple of weeks where they were together in Impact. now all of a sudden we learn that they're bitter. they literally tell us last week that they're bitter enemies in AAA. They've left that out. Mm-hmm. And now they're teasing dissension. So really, I think poor storytelling, hard to follow. People that comment on my impact reports and people that comment on your hits and misses who are, I think, members of the Impact front office say that all we need to do is follow their social media accounts to know the storylines, because I feel like I have big questions about what they do on a weekly basis, and I ask those questions in the report, and I get an answer of, well, if you follow them on Twitter, you would see this blah, 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 blah. That's fine if you want to forward storylines on Twitter. Maybe mention it on the television show, because I, believe it or not, I don't sit at my computer 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, hoping that the Impact Wrestling Twitter account tweets so I can be caught up on something going on. But yeah, confusing. I mean, I thought this was confusing. I thought the whole storyline's been confusing. Am I being unfair here, or is this kind of a mess?
No, the storyline's complete garbage. Yeah, I mean, I would be angrier about this match if it didn't happen last week the exact same way. Because, yeah, like halfway into the match, if things were kind of normal, it was Impact versus AAA, and then one of the AAA guys tripped his own partner, and I'm like, oh, okay, all right. So at that point, I basically checked out of the entire show because I knew nothing else was going to be good. It's a shame, too, because it's Slammiversary. James Storm and EC3 had a decent match, so that was cut short, but they had a pretty decent feud. They're both good wrestlers. They both can both talk on the mic, and they're being completely wasted in this angle. It's just, it hurts to think about. I mean, remember when Pagano came in, they gave him weeks of vignettes, and then he got the crap kicked out of him, and then he disappeared, and it just, nothing makes sense. There's nothing to get emotionally involved in. I would say it's the messiest angle of the year, except we're going to also talk about Raw versus SmackDown in the post show. So it's up there, though.
Yeah, for sure. OVE beat Phil Atlas and Brent Banks. This match came to us from Border City Wrestling in Windsor, Ontario. We went over this a little bit earlier. My notes from here is that Banks looked pretty good. I thought he looked good, but other than that, this, like I said earlier, this felt like a match that maybe wasn't supposed to be on TV, because Atlas and Banks were on top for most of the match. OVE was selling for most of the match. They kind of squeak out a victory at the end. I don't think this made them look very strong heading into essentially a handicap match against LAX.
Yeah, agreed. Am I missing something, or are they not going to the effort of putting their names on the screen so we know who these guys are?
I noticed it at some points tonight that they would put names on the screens, but tonight, in this match in particular, they did not, because I know I had to Google the names to make sure that I heard them right.
Okay. Yeah. That helps so much. Just show me a face and show me a graphic of their name. It takes 5 minutes. Send me the footage, Impact. I'll do it for you for free.
don't volunteer that. You might get a phone call.
That's true. $5.
Eddie Edwards then retained the GHC championship over Mara Fuji. We talked about that match. Seemed like it was a good one if we saw the whole thing.
Seemed good.
Yeah. Then, as I lose my place, so you're going to have to bear with me here for a second. Video aired on OVE versus LAX. Mackenzie Mitchell tried to interview Eli Drake, but he was busy. Laura Van Ness was looking for another husband. She was trying to give children glasses of champagne. Then Petey Williams, back to Border City Wrestling, Petey Williams wrestled Idris Abraham, Tariq, and I don't know who the fourth guy was, in part because I didn't really understand what they were saying, and also my internet cut out, so I actually did not see any of this match. Phil, wow. Me in here. Did I miss anything? I stream. I'm a cord cutter. I don't have cable, so my Wi-Fi modem, it's a combination modem and Wi-Fi router, and it decided it wanted to freeze up in me, so I had to restart it, and when I came back, they were in a commercial, and I missed the whole match.
Yeah.
I didn't miss much.
Yeah, I sat down, I watched the match, things happened, Petey Williams won, but this is one of those moments where I can't just turn off my brain and go, oh, I'll just watch a fun match. Because I'm like, well, 3 weeks ago, Petey Williams wanted to get his X Division title shot, and he was in Jim Cornette's office yelling at his opponents. What happened to that? Why is that not being progressed? What is this? What am I watching? Why is this a thing? When was this taped? It was fine, but just it was more irritating than anything.
Then we were actually back in the Impact Zone, where Johnny Impact and Garza Jr., they teamed up to beat Eli Drake and Chris Adonis. I thought this match was okay for what it was. I mean, it was there to get the world title match over and to make you want to see that world title match, and I think it did a good job of that for the most part. Wasn't anything you got to go out of your way to see, don't get me wrong, but I thought for the most part this match did the job it was supposed to do.
It was fine. Garza and Impact had a pretty good match last week. It's still weird to me that Garza's being inserted into the storyline at all and what part he's going to play at Bound for Glory, because he's getting a decently big push. I just don't know where it's headed, and it seems they should have thought that out in advance. The pants ripping thing will not do anything for me ever, but a decent match that just it's not making this feud between Eli Drake and Impact feel as big as it should. It's fine.
Apparently Garza Jr. and Johnny Impact are feuding with each other in AAA, which, again, people who comment on our stories at pwtorch.com, they inform me that I should know. I don't, and I think neither do most of the other people watching the show. So that might be something that they want to inform the audience of, other than just one little throwaway mentioned by one of the commentators. Maybe, have Johnny Impact talk about it or something. But, what do I know? Let's see. After that match, they aired a video on El Patron, hyping his return to Bound for Glory. They aired another video on Trevor Lee in Tijuana. Then Trevor Lee defending the X Division Championship in Tijuana at the Crash promotion against Ultimo Ninja, who they said was Garza Jr.'s brother. I don't have many notes on this match other than it happened.
The Ultimo Ninja. Okay. I've never seen him before. Likely we'll never see him again. Thanks, Impact.
Exactly. No mention either of what Trevor Lee was going to be doing at Bound for Glory. So, but hey, it's only 10 days away and they have one more episode to hype it. So,
exactly.
Then they had the main event, Bobby Lashley against Moose. Bobby Lashley had Dan Lambert in his corner. Moose had Stefan Bonner in his. The match ended when Dan Lambert hit Moose with a trophy to cause the DQ. America Top Team ran out. Big brawl ensued. And that's how they ended the show. Actually, no, they ended the show. They went to another video, a short video package after the main event.
Oh, yeah.
Hyping OVE versus LAX again, which was very strange. I don't think it was bad, but it was just oddly placed. That's how they ended the show. So that was it. Any thoughts on the main event? I mean, we talked a little bit about it earlier.
The match was fun. The whole show was like this. I would have given it a thumbs up. Good energy. The characters are defined well enough. I'm a fan of Dan Lambert for the most part. The angle largely stinks. But this panned. I do have to insert my Jeremy Borash complaint of the week, because that's what I've been doing lately. I've kind of noticed that Jeremy Borash just repeats what we're watching and doesn't offer anything new. So to end the show, in my mind, this is Jim Ross going, oh my God, this is a huge challenge. I can't believe this. You've got to tune into this show. You've got to order it. What a chaos has broken out. He just goes, six sides of steel. And he just reiterated everything we just saw with no passion. And it drives me crazy. But I had to note it.
No emotion. No emotion.
None.
If your announced team has no emotion, why should the fans emotionally invest?
He's not put in a good position because this show is all over the place and not very good, but at least fake some enthusiasm.
All right. Well, let's go quickly to another break And when we come back from that break, we'll get to our top three. It's our top three main events in the history of Bound for Glory. We'll get to that in just a moment here on the PW Torch livecast.
When you want to know when the next episode of the PW Torch livecast is scheduled or catch up on a show you missed, check out our homepage, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can stream the latest shows right from that page, or download the show, or get a link to subscribe on a podcast app. That's pwtorchlivecast.com for the latest shows, and also catch up on shows you missed at pwtorchlivecast.com.
All right, back here on the live cast. It's time for our top three. This week's top three, our top three main events in Bound for Glory history. Andrew, would you have as your number three?
Yeah. So just for fun, I went through the old back issues of The Torch, which you should subscribe to if you haven't, just to see the star ratings of every main event ever. And only one Bound for Glory main event has crossed the 4-star range.
Really?
Which I thought was kind of interesting. Yeah.
I wonder if it's my number one, because my number one I liked a lot.
I'm gonna say we probably have the number one. the very first Bound for Glory got 1 star, and I think that was Rhino versus Jeff Jarrett in like a 5-minute match. I'm gonna guess that's not on your list, so I felt free to say that one.
Yeah, that was not it.
Yeah, my number. So really, I'm only feeling really strong about one, and I'm going to guess it's our same one. But I'm going to go number three, 2008 Samoa Joe versus Sting. I guess I laughed there because it ends really badly, and there's a bunch of run-ins and some nonsense. But definitely one of Sting's better bouts in the company. Joe is still pretty hot at the time. They went with the wrong finish, of course, because Sting at that point in his career. Oh God, well, it's up there for my most frustrating TNA moments. Oh man, I'm sure we'll talk about that more someday in some form. But yeah, just it's good, I guess, but frustrating. So that's that's my number three.
Yeah, no, I'm in the same boat as you in the sense that like I feel really good about one of these, and everything else was kind of tough.
Yeah,
I went with 2010. Yep. Jeff Hardy beating Mr. Anderson and Kurt Angle, only because I thought that this was the beginning of an angle that could have worked. The Jeff Hardy heel turn, I think, could have worked. It didn't. They dropped the ball big time on it, and also you know Jeff's partly to blame for that too. But I remember at the time feeling like I was in the minority of being excited about that heel turn and saying, hey, you know what? He could actually do something with this, because he was wildly popular, but he wasn't as popular. The TNA crowd wasn't reacting to him the way that the WWE crowd was in mid-2009. So I remember thinking when he turned heel in 2010, like, okay, this might be the spark that he needs to really get himself to a new level in TNA and also help the company at the same time, because he was a star. You know, he was one of the few guys they had on their roster at the time that had star power, and it never really worked on any level, but wasted, but not wasted potential, but I guess, you know, I thought that was going to be bigger than it ended up being.
I remember I was on the reverse side of that, thinking they pulled a major mistake. And just the fact that it was Bischoff and Hogan as they on 10-10-10. But I thought those were the best promos Jeff Hardy ever cut when he got comfortable being a heel. So there were, and I don't think he's ever been a good promo guy, but I think those were actually pretty solid for a while. So some good stuff actually did come out of that.
What'd you have as number two?
Number two, I'm also not in love with. It also featured a Kevin Nash run-in. It took place the year before. Kurt Angle versus Sting, Bound for Glory 2007. I mean, this was Angle being able to carry anyone. Sting was always pretty mediocre at best in TNA. This has got to be one of his top three matches in the promotion. And he just brought it that night, you know, as much as he could. Of course, this was TNA, and they had silly nonsense and run-ins, but it worked for the time. It was pretty good, and it just basically was a lot better than I thought it was going to be. So maybe it's just like a pleasant surprise that makes it my number two.
I went with 2013, Bully Ray versus AJ Styles in a no DQ match. you know, I thought this match told a really good story. You know, they had some spots. Mm-hmm. It was violent at times, which you don't really see a lot of now in mainstream wrestling. I mean, for what it was in 2013, but I thought this match told a good story. It wasn't something where you came away going like, you know, wow, that was potential match of the year type candidate. But I thought this was good storytelling here. They had some spots you don't see all the time in 2017 or 2013 at the time, with some mm-hmm. of the more violent stuff they were doing. It was, like I said, it was a no DQ match, but just thought that the overall story of this match was good. You know, with Bully Ray, that was really when I think that Bully Ray character was sort of firing on all cylinders too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I think that was probably the peak character wise for both characters.
Yeah.
In that company, so that was definitely fun to watch from that aspect.
Drum roll, what do you get for number one?
So I kind of mentioned this last week, being in a theater to watch this, and there's no way there were 10 people in there. It was a fun idea. I it's fun watching wrestling in a theater with random wrestling hooligans, but I gotta go Austin Aries versus Jeff Hardy.
Yep.
At 2012. Man, I think they went with the wrong finish at the time, because Austin Aries was kind of cooking as a character as much as he ever had been. But yeah, just a really good match there. Best match on the card, which is very, very rare for the Bound for Glories, and really might be the only time ever. I'd have to go back and look, but yeah, those guys worked well together. They both brought it that night, and just ended the show on a great night. And I think it's easily the best Bound for Glory main event ever.
Totally agree. It's one I had as well. Yeah, I remember being really high in this match at the time. I thought they tore the house down, and I thought it was yeah. one of those. Even though it was TNA and it wasn't WWE, and not a lot of people were watching, you know, compared to WWE at the time, I thought that this was the match that really put Aries on the map, because I agree with mm-hmm. you that I thought they went with the wrong finish, but he was cooking, like you said, at the time, and he was really starting to get over, and this was a big stage for him, and I thought he really delivered with a guy who, like I said earlier, at the time was a star in Jeff Hardy. I mean, this guy was a bona fide superstar. Yep. And Aries went in and went toe-to-toe with him and looked like a star himself. I thought Jeff was good in this match, giving Aries enough to make him look like a superstar. I totally agree with you. This was one of the better matches. I'd even have it up there as one of the, you know, top 10 TNA matches ever. I thought overall it was just really, really good.
Mm-hmm. I'm probably with you. I don't have one written out.
Yeah, neither do I.
Thinking about it.
Yeah, just.
Yeah. I would definitely, say it's up there. Definitely a very, very strong, entertaining match.
All right. Well, that's our top three this week. We'll come back with a new topic next week, as we are, well, at that point, we'll be only 3 days away from Bound for Glory 2017.
All right.
I think we'll hype the show more than they will. Anyway, anything else? Mm-hmm. Anything else you want to add before we head over to the VIP after show?
Yep. I quickly plug a PW podcast like I do every week. I'm an editor over there. We're putting up new stuff all the time, and Killing the Town is going to be starting up with us for written recap. So I'm excited to get that going. That probably should be up tomorrow. Otherwise, wrestling, something to wrestle with. We'll have a couple episodes. I got to catch up on those. The Doink episode is coming up soon. So again, if you don't have all the time in the world to listen to all these great podcasts with wrestlers, check out pwpodcast.com and just read up on them in a few minutes. If you want to follow me on Twitter for my 3 to 5 snarky impact comments a week, it's Andrew Souck.
You can follow me on Twitter at Mike McMahon PW. You can check out my impact report on pwtorch.com from tonight's show. And I know Andrew will have a hits and misses column as well. Mm-hmm. And that'll do it for this week's edition of the PW Torch Livecast post impact show. We'll talk to VIP members in a couple of minutes on the VIP after show, And if you're not a VIP member, well, you should be. And Wade Keller is going to tell you all the reasons why you should be
seconds.
A VIP member here at pwtorch.com. So thanks again for listening to this week's edition of the show. Thanks for calling. Thanks for emailing. And Andrew and I will talk to you next week as we break down the go-home edition of Impact Wrestling, going home to Bound for Glory. So thanks again for listening. I'll let Wade tell you a little bit about PW Torch VIP before we get out of here. And for those that are VIP members, we'll see you on the VIP after show in just a couple of minutes. You've been listening to the PW Torch Livecast Post Impact Thursday edition.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Cutter Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the Ask the Editor format of the Weight Cutter Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Pass Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip.
Yeah.